right, welcome back to the Pat's Pints podcast. We are returning from yet another hiatus, probably about 6 months out since the last podcast. But of course, I was in Europe for part of that time, so that's at least a little bit to blame. I am joined today, as always, by my partner in crime, Mark Richards.
Yeah, season's greetings.
A good season for strong dark beers, isn't it?
That's Which right. is great.
And Mark and I are joined today by longtime home brewer AJ Zanuck. Welcome, AJ.
Cheers.
Happy to have you with us.
Absolutely.
Today's episode, like some of the ones we've been doing lately, is focused on a style of beer. And today we're going to be going into all the details on Baltic Porter.
Yum.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite styles.
It's a great style. And I've got a couple of people with me here who've been into Baltic Porters for longer than, you know, some people who are now drinking beer have been alive.
And you don't have to say it exactly that way, am I right? But I feel where you're coming from.
We've got some seasoned veterans in the world of Baltic Porters, and actually an interesting story to tell about how Baltic Porter came to be a style in the BJCP guidelines. Why don't we start off by just saying a little bit, what is a Baltic Porter?
Well, I've got one in my hand right now. A Baltica number 6, which widely available here in town. And what's this go for, AJ? About $1.79?
Actually, I don't pay attention to price. I just bought it.
Well, it's not a big spend to get a bottle of this, and it's a pretty good drinker. Very approachable. Has a little bit of that dark fruit, maybe a little licorice twist to it there. What are you getting out of that, AJ?
A little caramel.
Caramel.
Bit of chocolate, too.
Just a touch, yeah. There's a good toast character to this as well.
I would agree.
Now, Baltica is from Russia, if I'm not mistaken.
It's not Polish.
It is not Polish. Back up just a minute for everyone and do a little geography lesson. Baltics, what does that mean?
Talk about the Baltic Sea, right? The and Baltic surrounding Sea. Countries.
What are some of the countries that have a Baltic coastline?
Was it Estonia, Latvia?
Lithuania?
Finland?
Finland.
And don't forget Sweden.
And then I think they also extended into Poland and Austria or something, maybe? Russia.
I think at one time Poland was kind of part of Austria-Hungary region that would predate World War II, right? Mm-hmm.
That is correct. I just do want to point out Austria is landlocked, though. But
yeah, they've got some nice lakes, though. I'm planning a trip right now, actually. So inside that land, there's some water.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about how you guys got into Baltic Porters. You got into Baltic Porters back in the 1990s, right? In the 20th century. Mm-hmm. What were the Baltic Porters that turned you on to the style?
Took us back a whole century. That doesn't sound right to say. In last century.
Yeah.
Well, you know, most of the beers that we were finding of interest were imported beers. We were trying to mostly brew styles that we knew that were like 90s brew pub styles, you know, a lot of them from the UK, some European influence. We had Hosters here in town that excelled at lagers, you know, German style. And we have Barley's here in town, which did a fine job with, you know, UK styles, I would say, if that would probably be the best way to sum up some of that interest as it related to brewing. But the beers we were searching out were, you know, imported beers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 99% of what was on the shelves back then was fizzy, frozen, and flavorless.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really had to search to find something good. And then even if you found it, 9 times out of 10, it was the bottle on the shelf was rather dusty.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah.
Everything that was around at that time was, I don't remember Baltica, but I do remember Snaberkoff being around. I remember Carnegie Porter. What else was there? There was Okachim.
Okachim, is that how you say it?
Okachim.
Man, that was a good beer.
Saku, Estonian Porter, I remember that being around. I haven't seen that one in a long time, though.
Yeah.
And I think those are all from different countries, right? I think Carnegie from Sweden, the Snaberkoff from Finland, the Okachim, that's
Okachim,
Polish.
That was Polish, yes.
Yeah.
And the Saku, that's Estonian.
Estonian, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite among those?
Later on I found a favorite that I liked was Snaberkoff.
Okay, yeah, the Finnish one.
Yeah, and that was really good.
And then, Pat, you said you had one of those recently when abroad?
I went to Helsinki a few years ago, and I had a couple of those in a bar. Yeah, fantastic beer.
Nice. Couldn't have brought one back, could you?
It was on draft.
Okay, fair enough. All right, you're excused.
But then I guess then that inspired you guys to take up some homebrewing attempts at this style. These days, of course, there's lots of resources out there to try and come up with a recipe. But what would you have done back then?
Back then, there was nothing. I mean, you can read the bottle label, which told you a little bit. And then there was some excerpts on the back in what was the smaller internet back then that I found that was something like, you know, they would talk about the kilning methods and, you know, that brewers trained in London.
Okay.
And then took the recipes back and made them bigger and made them lagers and all that fun stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I think there is a thread to the story where they were like influenced by the London, the porters of London at some point in time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's like 12 different ways to tell these stories, and they're all different. It just depends on which text you seek out, right?
Yeah.
Well, it is kind of a hybrid style. I think of it that way. I don't know if that's correct, but you've got, I think it was influenced by things like the imperial stouts that would go to Russia. Where do you go? You go through the Baltic Sea to get there.
Yeah.
Some of those got dropped off. And then maybe I think that trade dried up a little bit due to war, and then they started, that's what they knew. Then I think there was also then, but that was kind of, well, lager brewing country that's near Germany. So you had the lager influence. And, well, to be honest, in places like Finland and Russia, it's pretty easy to lager things, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cold there, right? So yeah. Most of the year, it's great weather for lagering. What is the difference between robust porter and a Baltic porter?
The character of the roast, mainly.
And normally a robust porter would also be an ale.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a huge difference because I don't think that a Baltic porter has to be a lager, but I think most of them are.
Yeah, cold fermented ales or some such thing like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what the modern versions are doing, but I know back when we got started, they're lagers.
Okay. Yeah. I think most of them still are, as far as I can tell. Yeah. Tell me about this beer, Motherbird. Right. That was a beer that you came up with, AJ, back in the 90s. Right?
Well, the recipe came from me, but Motherbird came from Mark.
Okay,
that's right.
He was the label master back in the days, and he was creating all these interesting labels. And so I said, I got a recipe. You want to brew it with me? And he says, like, well, I'll cook up a label for it. And we went off from there. So
okay,
yeah. And AJ had a sizable kettle. Like you had like a 20-gallon pot, maybe 15.
Oh, I was 15 back in that day. Yeah,
15. Yeah. So we could brew, you know, enough that both of us could have a carboy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Which was always fun because we brewed several beers together that, you know, we went our different ways, sometimes using different yeasts and being able to come back and see what those differences were off of the base beer, which was always fun. Sometimes had a couple threw fruit in some of it, you know. Frankenberry, I remember that one. Just about turned out like punch in a beer. It was so purple from raspberries from the yard.
Yeah.
So I was looking at that recipe before the podcast, and it had something called porter malt, which I've never heard
porter
of.
Porter malt mix.
Porter malt mix.
So tell me about that.
Well, okay, the application that I was using back then was written by Daryl Richmond, who was a prominent homebrewer back in the day.
Okay.
He wrote an application for the Mac that I used to but it was limited in terms of how many entries you could make for your recipe.
Okay.
And I think it capped you off at like eight entries. So when I did a blend, so like when I did my base malt, I would use a blend of like, say, pale or pills.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Vienna and Munich.
Okay.
And so basically, I just basically rotated that into what I call a porter mix, which is like one third of each.
Oh, okay.
And then that way I had one entry for three grains.
So it was one third pale, one third pills, and one third
Munich.
Vienna or Munich?
Vienna and Munich, yeah.
Okay.
Well, depending on the recipe, it would be pale or pills. If it was a lager, it was pills. If it was an ale, I made pale.
Okay. So you guys brewed a big batch of Motherbird, and you split at the end of the day, you each went home with it was brewed at your place, AJ.
Yeah.
So Mark went home with the carboy.
I was always bottle conditioning mine at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd bottle every beer that I brewed. I would bottle in some of those. It was a benefit to have a bottle conditioned version of it later. Some others, you know, it was just for sake of portability to already have it in the bottle, even if it was a pale ale and you drank it fast. But I think, this particular beer definitely does well with some bottle conditioning, we found out.
Did you guys ferment with the same yeast?
No. I think we used different yeast.
I believe we did, yeah.
Yep. But the big thing back then was that Mark was bottling and I was kegging. and you take a keg of something like that to the a club meeting, and they just suck it dry.
Sure.
So when the state fair came around, I was out. So Mark still had a couple bottles left, so he entered them.
Yeah.
Okay.
You normally had to have 3 bottles to enter a competition.
Yeah.
I think I had lied about my stock being depleted. Probably about a case in was when I realized these should probably sit for a while. And then every now and then, if the right person was over, I'd say, hey, by the way, I got a mother bird left. Let's have one. And didn't break them out too often, but did at least have 3 bottles left to enter in the fair with some other entries that I had at that time.
And this was, at this stage, it was about 2 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah, about a year and a half old.
Yeah, a year and a half. This was the 2001 state fair, because we looked at it before we started.
That's right. And this was brewed October of 1999. That's when we were partying just like it was 1999 back then.
Making porter like it's 1999.
Yeah, so hey, you kids, when you hear that song, that's what we were doing.
Oh, you didn't answer my question about the yeast. So the one that went in the bottle.
Now, I thought you did 1028, right?
I believe it was, I thought it was London Ale, but, you know, we can settle all bets by walking across the room there.
But, I mean, I think I did, I think my favorite yeast back in those days was, maybe I did 1028. Hold on a second. Let's let Mark check.
I used 1028.
Okay, he used 1028. Okay. I used.
You were right, AJ.
I used, what did I use? I used almost an equivalent. It was a Y yeast. You know, was London Thames.
Basically, so this was far from a lager, but I mean, it was kept on a cold basement floor.
Yeah.
Okay. And you did have, well, it had 2 years in the bottle.
Had so 2 years you could of call conditioning. That lager. Boy, I'll tell you. Yeah.
So it turns out this beer, it won the best in show at the state fair. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct.
That's a big deal, I've got to say.
Certainly wasn't the amount of commercial breweries at that time, so. Probably in 99, a lot of the more interesting beers you were drinking were from home brewers.
Yeah.
And some really bad ones, too, actually. Yeah, but.
Well, it was interesting judging back in those days, because the hit versus miss ratio was towards the miss.
Yeah,
and it's a lot more towards the hit these days.
It is, yeah. Yeah. I'm judging a lot
harder
better beers
to judge
nowadays.
Now.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree.
I guess availability of ingredients is part of the story.
Well, and then, of course, there was knowledge and everything else, too, and equipment and whatnot. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, well, then I judged the day Mark won. And so, of course, I'm talking to Gordon Strong at the end of the day, and learned that he had an interest in the style.
Now, we might want to introduce who Gordon Strong is for some of the listeners out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back then he was another home brewer.
Okay.
he and I started about the same year.
Gordon's from Dayton, right?
Yeah, Gordon was from Dayton, and he was in the Dayton Club, and then we were from Sods. And of course, our two clubs back in that day would mix quite a bit. We would go to each other's events and whatnot. So the bottom line is that, you know, Gordon was there, and he judged best of show, and he was impressed with the beer and all that stuff. And then we did some emails back and forth and whatnot, and about 6 to 9 months later, he showed up on my front door.
Okay.
And
did he tell you he was coming?
He told me he was coming, and he brought a bunch of samples of the style, and then he brought some notes with him and stuff like that, and we basically brewed another batch in my basement.
Okay.
And then we drank the samples and we made notes. And. And then he took that off and basically turned it into what became the Baltic Porter style.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Or the guidelines, anyway.
I mean, that's kind of very cool to be part of that.
Yeah.
I really didn't even know this stream off of the story, I think, until recently. When you won with, once again, a Baltic Porter in the Barley's.
The resurgence, yes. Yeah.
Homebrew competition, yeah.
Yeah, right. Basically, Gordon, he took those notes that we made in my basement, and he went off and he polished it up a little bit.
Okay.
And then about a year later, he contacted me with a link to a forum that I got involved in. And it turned out it was all the guys that were the contributors for the BJCP style guides.
Okay.
And everybody was debating all the various styles. And so I got involved in it, and I made a couple points here and there. And then next thing I knew, about a year later, the 2004 style guidelines come out, and I'm listed as a contributor.
So that's very cool.
So I was happy, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, you know, we look at these style guidelines, and they're influential in a lot of ways. I mean, commercial brewers make a beer, they want to send it to GABF or whatever, has got to hit those style guidelines. So to kind of go inside that a little bit, basically you're saying that you went and found what kind of Baltic porters arrived here in America that you could get, and you sat and drank them, and then basically tried to say, what is the commonality of these beers? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, basically what I would do is, you know, I would get the examples of the style, whatever notes I could find on the internet, and then I just sat down and said, okay, I'm getting a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I just started, you know, making some notes, and I hobbled a recipe together, and I brewed it, and I said, you know, back then I said, hey, Mark, try this, and he said, oh, hey, I'd be interested in making a batch of that. So, you know, about a year or so later, we did.
Yeah, I think we brewed this 3 times in total, didn't we? Together, I know Hans did. Yeah. Joined in one time, and
I remember because the very next day he showed up with a loaf of bread.
That's right. Hans is always baking
from the spent grain, or no?
It might have been
occasionally, but Hans is a very good baker. I think you've been a recipient of a loaf before.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's a great baker.
Let me ask a different question, and that is, what is the first example of a domestic Baltic porter, commercial Baltic porter that you saw?
Oh, wow. Yes. I don't know.
After the style guidelines got out there, did the whole world say, oh, let's start making Baltic porters?
I've only really seen it in the recent few years. You know, we've had one at Land Grant. This is our 4th year, and we just released that actually in the past week or two.
Yeah.
I remember Warped Wing had one. Speaking of Dayton, I was over in Warped Wing, and they had a Baltic porter. There's a little boozy. It was a bit, I think it was way bigger than what I would consider a Baltic porter, maybe bordering more on a imperial stout, because I think it's like over 10%.
Well, I mean, the style guideline came out in 2004.
Okay.
And I really don't recall seeing anything commercially for several years.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to remember what that would have been. But, I mean, some of the local brew pubs picked up a bigger porter, but that was about it.
It certainly didn't enter my consciousness until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I
don't exactly, think. Yeah.
Well, we should probably have another beer.
Now, I think that's an excellent segue, Pat, to say we should probably have another beer. Maybe a Baltic porter this time.
Indeed.
The very same. Zivic. Is that how we would say that, Pat?
Zivic.
What do you think, AJ?
I heard that the W is a B.
Oh.
And the C can be either a C or a CH.
Okay.
So I heard Zivic.
Zivic.
That sounds pretty close. It, for the listeners out there, it's spelled Z-Y-W-I-E-C.
Yeah, but on those lines, I'm still trying to figure out Frouch, whatever whatever that Heather Ale is. So
Yeah. This is not a podcast about foreign languages, probably.
No,
but so let's move along.
Let's talk about this beer, though. So this one is from Poland. This one is, it's a bigger beer. Oh, 9.5%.
Yes.
So this is really at the upper end of the range. So what are you guys tasting?
I'm getting a heavy toast, and I'm getting a solid bitter at the finish, too, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's got a nice, it does have a bitter finish, kind of, you know, like a baker's chocolate kind of thing on the outside of the sides of your tongue going down. It's pretty smooth. You can definitely tell it has a lager-like Christmas to it, I think, in the finish. Mm-hmm. Would you say?
Well, I like this kind of a beer with a little bit of a bitter finish, because otherwise it comes off a little flabby.
And sometimes can be a little sweet too. And I would say, I would say that Baltika falls under that category where it doesn't have really enough hops to back up a lot of that malt, and it can have a little bit of a sweet side to it.
You could say it's a bit of an outlier in that it's so strong. But if you just wanted to go out and find a Baltic porter and say, what is this style all about? This would be a pretty good one to find, don't you think?
Especially one from the region. I think it's a great example that's available.
Mm-hmm. And also pretty good price. You've got a 500 milliliters of a 9.5% beer, which I think
it's $2.29.
Yeah.
Is what I paid at Pace High.
You know? Okay.
Really nice beer. Doesn't come across as cloying. You know, we talked about that bitterness, which is so important, mm-hmm. and it's full of flavor. Here's a question that I just have. This goes back to kind of a home brewing kind of thing. You're making this with a lager yeast. I would say Baltic porter, would you agree with me, should have just a little bit of dark fruit character?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of that starts to come out. This is a pretty cold bottle that's been straight out of the refrigerator. Once this sits in your hand a few minutes, it really starts to open up with some of those dark fruits and more of the chocolate.
Yeah, I purposely shoot for the dark fruit flavor. I like to go with complexity. A Baltic porter that won Barley's last year actually had 14 grains in it.
Wow.
And
okay.
So I like to layer. So when I on my my crystal malt component, it's like a you know like a pound of crystal 80. And then it's got like a half a pound of something like a special B, and then another half a pound of something like a that new Simpsons 190.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
And so that you get the whole toffee, caramel, toast, roast, you know, and all that dark fruit going in there, and I just love that.
Okay, so really, basically, complexity, that dark fruit complexity is coming from layering of the crystal malts.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Because the 80 gives you that toffee character. Then you got something like the Special B gives you that raisin,
right?
Then that Simpsons 190 gives you something in the area of like it's just like a deep dark fruit character to it, and you get all those going.
Well, here's then another question, and it relates back actually to the whole State Fair beer. If you've got that kind of complexity, how much difference do you think you can taste between making a lager and making an ale?
Well, in the sense that when I make it as an I have made it as an ale, but I'm usually using something like 1056 and I'm fermenting at 55 degrees.
Yeah. So yeah. Probably we could agree that unless you're making a very simple clean beer,
yeah,
it's hard to pick up the differences between
a pretty big and forward beer.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
and this one especially at 9.5, although I would say alcohol is evident. I wouldn't peg this for 9.5, would you? Drinks
no,
pretty smooth.
Yeah, but when you read the style guidelines for this beer, you get like, you know, what does it say, like dark fruit. It says molasses, raisin, plum, you know, all that, all those kind of things. And that actually sounds like a warm ale ferment.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, that's why I
right.
asked that question.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good point.
But I like to keep things simple. I keep the grains the same. I brew cold so that I can change the grains and do my adjustments that way.
Okay.
Because trying to do adjustments by warm fermenting, you don't know what you're going to get.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course.
Now, AJ, when we brewed Mother Bird, it was like, what, triple concoction?
Decoction.
Thank you.
It was a concoction.
It was a concoction for sure. But yeah. So when we brewed it, it was triple decocted, right?
I don't recall that.
I recall it. And I was just like, man, this is going on.
Okay.
I mean, it took us a long day of it.
Yeah. You know, it might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember that. And I didn't bring my notes, but it's, you know, I was big on decoction back then. Like, we could have done that.
I think we did. And we were even like, wow, three times. And now I don't know that it could have helped a lot to lend to some of those caramely complexities in those malts.
Just to back up for some of the listeners who are not brewers themselves, can you tell us what decoction mashing is?
He can tell you what concoction is.
How do you do a decoction concoction?
So a decoction mash, I think, AJ, you're the first one to introduce me to it, and probably as a necessity back in the day to keep your mash up to temp, would be boiling as you're drawing off your wort from your mash. And this can be a very good way to make sure you're hitting all three of your temperature rests as you are in three steps, you know, ladling your boiled decoction back into the mash.
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, they didn't have thermometers back then.
Right.
So what they would do is they would pull off a portion and then boil it and then dump it back down, and that would raise the mash temperature.
Because boiling is always the same temperature all over planet Earth if you're at the same elevation, right?
Relatively, yeah.
Yeah, and so you boil it, and then it's just, if you're at a certain temperature and you have one-third at 212 Fahrenheit, you put them back together, and you can predict where you're going to go.
Yeah, get your median. Right.
Yeah, and you can predict it. I've actually watched a master do this. I brewed many, many, many years ago with Herb Bressler.
Oh, wow. And I haven't heard that name in a long time.
He's still around. He's still
brewing. Man, I'd love to see Herb.
He's still brewing, too. But he and I brewed a wheat beer on my back patio many, many years ago. And he had his calculator and a notepad out, and we would measure so many pounds of grain or scoops of grain or something like that, and we would boil it, and he'd put it back in. He says, we're going to hit this temperature, and damned if we didn't hit it.
Wow, that's cool.
We did it a second time, nailed it again. Third time, nailed it again. It was impressive.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
But also, of course, in the modern day and age, we have thermometers, but there's also something about the decoction and the flavor, right? So it's famous in German and Czech Pilsners, particularly Czech Pilsners. And there you have a simple beer, But you think you could taste a decoction mashing in a beer like this?
Well, it bumps up what they call the melanoidins, which is that, you know, that special, you know, umami, what do you want to call it, kind of a character that you can't really describe, but it's there, and it gives you this level of flavor you just can't get otherwise.
Right. Okay. Yeah. What about IBUs on a Baltic Porter? We were just talking about how there has to be enough bitterness to balance all that malt sweetness.
Well, the guidelines specify was like 20 to 40, something like that.
I wrote it down. Let me see.
Yeah, it's 20 to 40.
And then, but I usually do mine at like 45 to 50.
Okay.
And I just don't tell anybody.
Okay. You know, I think actually, especially if you're going to set it aside for a while, it's not a bad idea, because when those hops start to fade down a little bit, you know, you make yourself have a longer lasting beer in the bottle, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Well, the way I've been making mine lately, I've been using a lot of adjuncts and stuff like that, so it's got a creaminess to it and stuff like that, which tends to give it a lot of body, tends to give it a lot of sweetness.
Okay.
And you need to balance that a little bit.
Does it matter what hops you use?
I think I've been using basically Magnum a lot lately.
Okay.
Just a big
clean bittering.
Just a nice clean dose of Magnum up front, and then I might do some like a half an ounce of a noble hop at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. It would probably be mostly noble hops, like originally, you know?
Yeah, Hautauer, Tet, Saaz, whatever.
I would think so. It's what's available in that region. Mm-hmm. Mm.
They don't grow hops in Sweden and Finland, I don't think. It's too cold up there.
Can't just dig them up under the ice.
So I want to come back just a little bit to styles, and then we're going to go on with the story. But if we talk about styles, we talked about the difference between a Baltic Porter and a Robust Porter earlier. What's the difference between a Baltic Porter and a Schwarzbier?
One, it's a lot lighter. I don't really think you get quite the, like, the chocolate caramel, you know, it's a lot more just roast flavors, you know, coffee flavors. A lot drier too, I would say. Kind of a really, you know, almost like a Schwarzbier, you don't really get the dark malts as much anyway.
You wouldn't have the
probably
dark fruits.
Akin to a dark pilsner, you know.
Like. That's where I was going to go with it, because I've actually never made one, but it was, to my mind, it has always been a pilsner with a handful of dark grains thrown in.
That's the way I would look at it, too, like a good German pilsner, but dark.
Yeah.
So, that's what I would
say. Fair enough. Do you think there's any relation between a Dunkel and a Baltic Porter?
Oh. I could see that. Munich Dunkel is like, isn't that like 50% Munich?
I think so.
Yeah. Probably Munich malt drives a lot of that beer.
Exactly,
But it would be lower ABV. It wouldn't have the dark fruit overtones and things, I guess.
Yeah.
I'd have to have the beer. We'd have to have the beer in front of us, right? Yeah.
We don't have any Dunkels.
I mean, I made a Dunkel not too long ago, maybe 2 years ago, and I don't recall putting as much caramel malts in it.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I think you could make a Dunkel maybe just from base malts, if you call Munich a base malt.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or maybe like dark Munich, like that 15 Lillebonne stuff.
Right. Yeah. That's a good malt.
Yeah.
Well, let's fast forward in time a little bit and say that your Baltic Porter, AJ, won the Barley's Homebrew competition. Let's see, what was that, 2016 maybe?
2017. Yeah.
How is that recipe similar or different to the State Fair beer that we talked about earlier in the podcast?
I'd say like 85%, something like that. It's not too different. I just play with ratios a little bit.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I made probably since the State Fair, between State Fair and Barley's, I'd say there's probably maybe 8 versions of the beer. But I'm just talking, you know, a couple percent of each grain here, back and
tweaking
forth.
Just
tweaking it. You know, I try to dial in the chocolate, and then I try to dial in the dark fruit. And then the last batch I made, I try to dial in the toasted character. So every time I change one thing.
Yes.
And then I say, okay, that's where it stays.
Well, as a good scientist would. I mean, if you change 3 variables, how can you know which one matters?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the flip side, too, you change one thing, and it does skew the others a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So the Barley's Homebrew competition, for people who don't know, it's a homebrew competition sponsored by Barley's Brewing, but it's been going on for, I don't know, a long time.
20-some years.
Yeah, a long time.
So it's one of the most historic homebrew competitions in the state of Ohio, I would say. I mean, at least I would call it that, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, no, we've been in Ohio a lot longer than you, Pat. I'm not sure. You know,
well, I mean,
you've got the State Fair and things. But if you win the State Fair competition and the Barley's Homebrew competition, that
you got to be doing something right with that recipe.
I think Barley's competition's going into their like 23rd year now, something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And when you win it, that means next year you get to come back and brew the beer at Barley's. So, what was it like to take homebrew recipe and scale it up to a commercial recipe there at Barley's?
Well, I mean, first thing is that when you take a 5-gallon recipe and you multiply it by 60 and then brew it on somebody else's equipment, you're going to get a different beer. You have to be ready. Sure. You have to be ready for that. But basically, I took the recipe, multiplied it out, and then I showed it to Angelo. And one of the first things the brewery will tell you is that we like to do whole bags and half bags.
Makes sense.
So basically, I had to take whatever I'd given him and skew it towards that. And then to his credit, he went out and got everything.
Okay.
I mean, I had 14 different grains in that batch, and he got them all. So, kudos to him. And then
Angelo is a saint.
He is. Well, that's the home brewer. But the bottom line was that you got the right hops. You got and when it came to yeast, when Gabe and I were mashing in, Angelo took a hand cart with a 5-gallon bucket of sanitizer, walked down the street to Gordon Biersch, and came back with 5 gallons of lager slurry. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, Barley's is not known for their lagers, are they? Even their Pilsner is not a lager.
Exactly, yeah.
How long did it have to lager?
Well, that was the thing, is that to fit into the schedule, we had to crunch it.
Okay.
Basically, we brewed the beer a month before it went on tap.
All right.
So we did a fast lager. We just bumped everything up a couple degrees along the way.
Okay.
And just rushed it through a little bit.
Turned out nice.
It worked for
Turned
me.
Out nice.
Yeah.
Actually, we're drinking right now. It's going on 2 years old, but a bottle of the homebrew that won the competition.
That won the competition. It's a little tired, but it's still not too bad.
Yeah, the corners are knocked off a little bit. It's a little rounded.
Yeah.
But it's held up.
That's right.
It was called Foolish Mortal, right?
Yeah, Foolish Mortal.
And there was a barrel-aged version.
Angelo put, I think he did 2 50-gallon barrels.
Okay.
And I got a couple growlers of it. And so when we went, the three of us went to the Westgate Homebrew annual meeting.
Their
seasonal meeting.
Yeah.
Well, it was nice to be invited to that. I had
Absolutely.
A good time. There were some great beers there.
But we drank the last of the bourbon barrel aged Foolish Mortal.
It was very good.
Yeah.
It was very good. Yeah, this is a beer that goes pretty well with the barrel.
It does.
It's probably the first time I'd had a barrel aged Baltic Porter though.
Yeah. Well, when he said you want a bourbon barrel aged, and I said hell yes.
Yeah.
I said go for it.
It's an easy question to answer,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we probably should then move on and taste a few of the domestic examples.
Yeah, and I have actually last year's Deep Search as well, if we want to do a vertical.
Okay. Yeah, why don't we do that?
Could be interesting. I could get a couple extra glasses, so maybe we could have them side by side.
A little foray into aging.
Yeah, right. We've got a local example here, the Land Grant Deep Search Baltic Porter.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Actually, it's one of my favorite beers that we make.
Well, let's start with the new one.
Let's start with the new one, which is on the right. So I had an old one in the fridge here from last year, so I'd been saving it to do a vertical.
Okay. But we're starting with the new one, right?
We're starting with the 2019.
The 2019.
Current year. This makes a fine chili, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you made a really good chili with this. We're going to put a recipe for the Baltic Porter chili up on my blog site, so look for that.
Yeah.
It's a very nice beer. Coming off of the Zybich.
Yeah, coming off of the Zybich, it's a step down in alcohol, just by 1%.
This 8.5%.
8.5%.
Doesn't drink like 8.5%.
No, not at all.
It's a little drier. It's very easy drinking, I think, for a beer of this description. Not quite as much of the chocolate, probably.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards the elder. Yeah, I think the older one has a little better dark fruit to chocolate relationship.
I would agree that the new one is dialed back quite a bit on the dark fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a beer that ages, what are the kind of changes that happen? So one of the things is the hop flavor will die off, right?
Typically, you'll lose some bitterness, yeah.
Yeah. Well, or aroma,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is not a hoppy beer. So if you do get oxidation, let's just say hypothetically it might happen, that could bring a little more fruitiness to it, couldn't it? Kind of like a sherry.
True.
Boy, that old one's just so much more complex, isn't it?
I agree. I think
it just speaks to how well the Baltic Porter can age. I mean, I know that these ones that we got from across an ocean I think they were dated like 2017, one of them anyway. Yeah. You know.
They're not sending FedEx.
Let's just put it that way. It's not FedEx overnight.
They're on a slow boat.
They're on a boat, maybe. Yeah. And it's not clear how long it took them to load on the boat and how long it took to get to Ohio and somebody at Giant Eagle to put it out.
Yeah, and how long they sat on the hot dock.
Right. But despite all that, they still tasted pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one lesson of this podcast might be, you know, sitting on a Baltic Porter for a year or so, not a bad thing.
Hey, it worked in the case of Motherbird for sure, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, without question.
It's almost a theme that runs through the whole podcast.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, big dark beers in general, too. It's like my Russian Imperial Stout, I sit on it in the secondary for like a year.
Sure. Oh, in the secondary for you.
I will not keg it because I will drink it.
Okay.
So it sits for a year while it ages out.
Now, Mark, I have a question for you. So I know from listening to the Beers with the Brewers podcast, our brother podcast, we might say.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that was mentioned this week, wasn't it? Little cross promotion here. Yeah. Beers with the Brewers.
That you guys change up the recipe a little bit to try and, you said, make it taste now like last year's recipe tasted in 6 months.
That was the plan. And
how do you do that? What would you do to the recipe to make that happen?
You know, that's a great question. I could compare the two recipes, and we'd have to have, I think, Dan on the podcast to speak to it.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He's the one that threw it together.
Do you have any idea if that's changing in the malt bill?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
it was. There were a couple hop changes as well, which were neither here nor there. They're all noble hops and not significant enough, you know, although it is IBUs 39 on this, AJ. Yeah. So trying to go on the high side of that, which I think it's a good move on an 8.5 beer.
Yeah. But I mean, that is an interesting concept, you know, to ask a bunch of brewers, you know, how would you make a beer to taste the best on next September 17th?
Yeah. That's a conversation in and of itself. So the malt bill on this is Munich, Swain Pilsner, aromatic malt, caramel Munich, extra special malt, and Black Prince give us some color without a lot of a lot of that burnt character.
Well, it's got a beautiful color. Dark copper. I don't know. How would you guys describe
almost
it?
Almost ruby.
Ruby.
Yeah. Rich ruby.
That's ruby.
It tastes better the more it's warming up right now. Like
as it warms up. I mean, I think it's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really starting to open up.
Yeah, a lot of beers are like that. I mean, one of my all-time favorites to serve slightly chilled and then put it in a goblet and just sip on it for a little while is Sammy Claus.
Yeah.
Sammy Claus is like 18 different beers between 45 degrees and 65 degrees. It's just amazing.
And at the strength that it is, it's good to savor it over a long period of time.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, AJ, you had a story earlier. You were talking about the malting process back in the old days.
Yeah.
That maybe went down in the creation of this style.
I think it plays a part. When I was researching the style, I discovered that the one historical reference that I could find was in terms of blown malt, which if you look back at the 2004 guidelines, we mentioned blown malt, and then it subsequently got rotated out. But in the days before drum roasting, they would put the grains in a shallow pan, and then they would do a wood fire, which is very uneven. And so what would happen is they would get this uneven cooking, and then they would at some point the grains would start to pop.
Okay.
And then they would pull them out. And they were shooting for brown malt back in those days, but the reference also mentioned spraying water to keep them from popping. So to me, that's crystal malt.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
Yeah, so basically what you've got is if you were to go through that pan, I'd be willing to bet that you're going to find everything from amber malt to brown malt to middle crystals to high-end crystals to even something resembling like a low chocolate.
Probably.
So basically, you know, and they were using that as the like 80% of the grist. So, I mean, and you know, hence, you know, you're looking at Baltic Porters today, you know, you got crystal malt, you got brown malt, you got base malt, you got chocolate malt. They were getting it all in one pan, and we're putting it in separately, but what's the difference?
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Yeah.
It's like the porter mix squared.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly.
AJ's porter mix.
Yeah.
Plug that in your Mac, AJ.
Stick that in your Mac and process it, yeah.
Boy, I'm glad I saved that 2017 can or 2018.
Yeah. I definitely think that the one-year-old Deep Search holds up with the European examples with the best I've had.
And, you know, that could lend to the fact that the European examples that we have are pretty old. But we have a 2017 keg, a 2018 keg, and a 2019 keg.
Okay.
And we've got a bourbon barrel aged. We just have Deep Search on now for this year, but I was thinking here in a few weeks, maybe we'll do a vertical down at the brewery. I think we want to taste this 2017 first to make sure we want an audience to consume it. However, it could be a real interesting four-beer flight.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, count me in if you do that.
Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to it. It's like Angelo has a history of finding old kegs, and I'm hoping that sometime in the near future, Foolish Mortal turns up somewhere.
Yeah, I have a sneaky suspicion that Angelo, much like when I would occasionally find that one last mother bird, you know, when you've got that beer and you've got it in bottles and you've got it stowed away in boxes, it's pretty easy to say, yeah, it's all gone. But then a year later, you try it and you're saying, man, wait till AJ comes around. We're going to pop this one open.
Yeah.
I'll bet he's got something up his sleeve there, AJ.
We'll find out, yeah.
Now, AJ, if someone at home, a homebrewer, said they want to foray into the Baltic Porter game, what advice would you give them? Complex malt bill, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the only way I can say it, basically, is, you know, at least Vienna, possibly Munich in the base malts.
At the sort of one-third of the base malt?
Well, I mean, whatever your base malt is, yeah, you can break it up however you want. Sure. There's no guidelines on that, but, I mean, you could do quarters, halves, you know, whatever you want to do. But, you know, I would definitely do I wouldn't make it all pale malt or Pilsner. I mean, I would definitely rotate in a significant amount of Vienna or Munich. Put in some biscuit, aromatic, amber, brown, something like that. Get some toast going. And then layer your crystal malts, of course. And then the dark malts, I'm adding like pale chocolate, like a black patent.
Okay.
And or Prince, or what's the other one? The Weyermann Huskless.
Midnight wheat.
Yeah, the midnight wheat the chocolate wheat. And then I'm doing the whole gambit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's drink one more local example. There's not a ton of local Baltic Porters, but there's another one that is the Pragmatist by Actual Brewing Company.
Yep.
Great label art, as always, from Mira. You've got a hippopotamus and a faceless person. Almost all of the actual labels contain a faceless person.
Yeah,
So it's kind of a purple color, which is fitting. Well, let's see.
I'm getting a heavy chocolate on this one.
I get a lot of chocolate in the nose. It's almost like it's in the middle of the two. When we had the vintage and the new Deep Search, it's like it falls in the middle of them, doesn't it?
Are we calling year old vintage now?
yeah, year old. Well, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is 6%, by the way.
Wow.
Actually drinks a little bit bigger than 6% in terms of its flavor.
Yeah, it's got a lot of flavor. Chocolate malt is in the forefront. If you told me this was an English porter, I would believe you as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, more roastiness probably than we've encountered all night.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Yeah, doesn't suck. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, cheers. Well, AJ, thanks for coming on tonight.
Oh, it's great.
It's been a lot of fun to drink some great, amazing beers and to talk Baltic Porters.
I had a good time.